The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
If 5 years ago, my guests this morning were side by side in an operating theatre when one of them gave the other a second chance at life. An extraordinary story, courtesy of Niamh O'Flanagan and Johnny McCarthy, who join us this morning. Good morning to you both, and thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, Ryan.
Hello.
Let me start with you, Johnny. You're from what part of the country?
I'm from Ballintubber in County Mayo.
In County Mayo.
Yeah.
And I suppose for the purpose of our story, it was the accident when you were 13 that was a bit of a game changer.
Yeah. I got knocked down late night, one night on the St. Stephen's night when I was 13, and it kind of changed a lot of things for me. I'd got some head injuries and still affect me today.
And did it affect your experience at school then?
I did, yeah. I was kind of in out of quite a few schools after, and, you know, concentration was difficult and, you know, exams and all that kind of stuff.
But you were okay otherwise?
I was okay. I was in full health besides, yeah.
And mental health all good?
Yeah, mental health was good, yeah.
Okay. And then at 18, you finished school, obviously.
No, I finished school a bit before that.
I finished
about 16, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, school, yeah. I wasn't too good. I found it hard to piece things together, you know. And so I left school about 16, yeah.
At 18 then you decided to head stateside.
Head for America, yeah.
And how did you get on there?
I got on great, yeah. It was good. I had friends out there and it was party time, party season.
Really? Where were you and what were you up to?
New York, but I was working mainly in health clubs and, like, you know, it was hard to get work, so you just took whatever was going. So I got work eventually in a health club and I worked there for a year.
You partied a little hard.
Yeah, I was partying, yeah, too much. The pubs opened till late at night then. Like, we used to closing at 11 that time in Ireland, and suddenly it's round the clock in New York.
Yeah, and you got stuck in, obviously.
Yeah, stuck in.
Did it become too much of a problem for you then?
Well, it wasn't too much of a problem for me. I think it might have been for others, but it was great crack for me.
You're right.
Yeah, you know, so at that time, really, but it started creeping up me at a young age.
In what way?
I suppose, you know, you can't get money together, you know, or all your money going at the weekend. You know, your money, you get paid on Friday, it'd be gone by Sunday, you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, you're relying on people to help you out, really, which they did, thank God for them. And how to put a plan together, how to do things, you know.
Of course.
Like, I say, my ambition was to travel the world, but, you know, you get stuck in places, you know.
And you stopped drinking?
I stopped drinking when I was 26, yeah.
But you, from what I understand, you swapped one hard habit for another.
Well, I stopped drinking then. I managed to stop drinking eventually. And then I started taking some drugs and that, and I took up jogging and karate and cocaine in that order. But anyway.
It's a strange trilogy of things to have in your life.
I'm a bit mad. Anyway, what can you do? But I wasn't a big drug taker, really. Like, I wasn't a big drug taker, but I found myself getting very paranoid, you know. Like, I used to smoke some marijuana occasionally, and I used to get really paranoid. Like, I mean, terribly paranoid. Like, and I found myself going down the same way. And where I was working on the horse and carriages in New York, you know, fellas used to come up to me because I was a big lad, and they'd say, oh, we need you to bring us around, because they were afraid from the paranoia. Mm. And I hated paranoia. And I still get it occasionally, like, and, you know, it certainly did me damage without a doubt, you know. And when you have head injuries, the alcohol, you know, having one pint is like taking two. It has twice the kick for half the price.
Okay. I understand.
I know.
I suppose that for you then, all roads then led to this church in Penn Station, of all places.
Yeah, well, my uncle was a Capuchin, and for some reason where I'd work, I found this little church on Penn Station. You know, it's just beside, it's where that Father Michael Judge.
Yes, yeah. 9/11
two of them there, yeah. There's Capuchin and Franciscans there, and I used to go in there. And I had no idea who God was, but I knew who Padre Pio was from my grandmother, God rest her. And I went in there one day and I prayed to Padre Pio, and I managed to get the help I needed to kick everything I needed to kick.
What did you ask Padre Pio to do for you?
Well, I just asked for help, really, to get back into to stop my behaviour. Mm. But now my brother, God bless him, they're always praying for me in my house anyway. You know, they're like, it was a bit crazy, really. And you know, because I'd black out when I used to go out, and I couldn't remember and things like that. And you know, I'd wake up in situations that were dangerous very, very regularly. I'd get into dangerous situations, maybe not through my own fault, but just being in the wrong place at the wrong time and just managing to escape. Like a crack dealer saving my life in New York, you know, and I was heading for the, just falling and things like that, you know, and, you know, car accidents and
yeah,
that's that kind of carry on, you know.
There's a seriously potential a book title there for your autobiography, A Crack Dealer Saved My Life.
Yeah, well, he did actually. Yeah, he saved my life. Yeah, without a doubt, you know. Amazing. And, you know, like, ending up in dangerous situations, or, you know, like, taxi driver holding a big knife up to my neck, and, you know, just like, I read things that people haven't got away with, you know, and I've got away with it, really. Sure. So for some reason or another, you know. And
so you didn't, you went off the booze and the drugs, that was about 33 years ago, and you came back to Ireland at the age of 26.
I came back to Ireland at 26, yeah, and I went to agricultural college, and in the course of the year in agricultural college, I got really sick. I got very bad arthritis, and I couldn't walk very far or anything like that, and I was at home, and I said, oh, what now, really? But anyway, the good doctor came to my rescue. I still have arthritis, but I can get around. Some days I'm well knocked out with it, and I can't walk very far, and other days I'm grand then.
You ended up going to Galway to study arts.
I did English and philosophy there for a while, yeah.
And I presume it's the philosophy element that brought you then into getting involved with local youth groups and faith groups.
I was involved in it before that, really. And there was a really good youth group in Galway at the time. They probably saved my life. They actually saved my life, would you believe it?
And the youth groups and faith groups, you'd go and talk to them. What would you talk to them about?
Well, from there I was invited to join the diocesan retreat team in Tuam, and I was with them for quite a few years, just giving talks to teenagers and so on.
Well, that's in neatly enough where you come in, Niamh. Because that's maybe you tell us a bit about that, your first encounter with Johnny.
Sure, yeah. So I met Johnny in 1996. I was a Leaving Cert student in Roscommon, and he came in with Father Benny McHale to give a school retreat. And I've known Johnny ever since. We stayed in touch after that time, actually, because I suppose I had a profound experience during that time.
How?
Well, I was a bit wayward, a bit of a wild teenager, you know. And kind of, I suppose, trying to find my niche and where I was supposed to go and all the rest of it. And just something that Johnny prayed with me, actually, at the time. And it just struck a chord with me. And I ended up going on then to study theology and eventually became a teacher.
Which was not the plan.
No, absolutely not. No, I wanted to be an architect or a vet or, you know, something totally different. And I suppose my father was a teacher, and I didn't envisage myself going down that route at all. Mm. But
well, what happened in that experience with Johnny? What the religious experience changed you?
He prayed with me, and as he was praying with me, I just kind of felt like I was swallowing fire. It was quite amazing, really. And it stayed with me. And it was coming up to the change of mind form for the CAO. That was, I think, the month of May. So I just decided to just change my plans. And I had actually, would you believe, wanted to become a clarinet player with the band of the Western Command. And as it happened, they weren't recruiting at the time. So so it kind of just worked out well for me. But the day then that I was accepted onto the HDIP to become a teacher, I actually got a letter from the Band of the Western Command saying that they were recruiting now. But I had made my mind up at that stage. So
that brings us back to Johnny then, because when you were 46, then we go on a few years, and you were obviously had formed a friendship with Niamh. She meanwhile had been married and a couple of kids and so on. But you got sick with your kidney.
Yeah, the kidney failure, got membranous nephritis, and I swelled up to about 8 stone over with fluid and all of that, and I was in hospital for 6 months, and went to do one of them near death experiences where I felt myself going off to the great beyond, off to the Creator, as they say it.
Yes.
And I came out of that anyway, and I was 8.5 years in on dialysis, and Niamh came along to me one day and said, I'll give you a kidney. I said, don't be bothered doing that now. And
wait a second, Niamh, you what?
Yeah. She came along one day and said, I'm giving a kidney.
Yeah. Well, I said to Johnny, you know, look, whichever, tell me your blood type, find out your blood type, and if I'm the same, I'll go forward.
Yeah.
And this was back in, I'd say, maybe 7 years ago. Or more, 8 years ago. And every time I'd see Johnny, his health was just deteriorating so badly. He had been on, I think, dialysis for 8 years.
Yeah, it was on dialysis, probably 7 years, six years at that time. I was lying in the bed, you can't get up out of the bed, you know.
And you were seeing this Niamh, and saying,
I have
a solution.
Well, for me, like, it was just a practical solution to a difficult problem. I've been blessed with good health, and I just felt, why wouldn't I give him a kidney if I could, if I was in a position to. So, he kept coming back to me, and I'd say, you know, Johnny, come on, what's your blood type? And he'd say, oh, no, don't know. And then one day I asked him, and he said what it was. And I said, OK, that's it. I'm going forward. What do I do? So he said, get in touch with Beaumont. So I got in touch with Beaumont anyway. And they said it was a bit unusual because I wasn't related to him. So I had to prove that we were friends and, you know, that I wasn't being coerced into the situation. So I kind of started that process. And I suppose at the time I was in a stable marriage. My kids were about 10 and 7, and they were actually younger at the time, because the workup process took about 2 years.
And what were your friends saying to you?
Oh, they thought I was mad. They really did.
I thought you was mad.
Looking back now, I think it was just a kind of concern for me, really, I suppose. And they genuinely thought I was going to be affected health-wise from this. And, you know, they'd say things like, you know, well, what if one of your children needs a kidney? And I just said, well, if that happens, that happens. But we can't live our life wondering what might or might not happen, you know.
Because you had had, forgive me for interrupting you, but you'd had this, one of those life experiences that would inform something like this in a way that it wouldn't for somebody else, because you were, I think, 23.
Oh, yes.
You know, in the brass band and Boyle. That was, what happened that day?
Oh, that was the day my life changed completely. I was with my father. My father was 55 at the time, and we had played in this brass band for years together. And he played saxophone and I was playing the clarinet. And actually, it was strange, because that day I was lined up in the front row right beside him. I'd normally be in the second row. And we were in some summer parade. It was August. It was exactly a month before 9/11. And we were marching down the street. We played our first tune, and he looked at me and he said, what are we playing next? And I kind of thought, why is he asking this? Like, we're playing number two. It's the second tune, you know. And I said that to him, and we started to play our second tune. And next thing, he leaned into a car window. And I said to myself, oh, he just knows that person, you know, because Dad knew everybody wherever we went. Yeah. He just knew people. And he had taught in Boyle as well. So there was no doubt, you know. But as we marched on and we played, the music behind us began to fade. And I just knew something was wrong. And I ran back, and he was literally, this healthy man, or so I thought, was having a heart attack in the middle of the street with everybody watching us. And I just got down on my knees. I put his head on my lap, and he died.
Oh, I'm sorry. How old was he?
He was 55.
What a strange and terrible thing to happen.
Yeah, devastating. Absolutely devastating. And I suppose from that point on, I've kind of been fearless, really. I don't know, is it that I just know, I just get the sense that he's protecting me. But I had no doubt but this kidney operation would work. I really did believe that, you know. And I'm a teacher, and I said to my principal, I said, I'll be back at work within 2 weeks. And I was.
You're some woman. And Johnny, the professor in charge of the surgery said that chances of a match like this was like winning the lotto.
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of antibodies and that, you know, from the car accident when I was young, and a lot of blood taken. He told me that, he said it was like winning the lotto, That's I should have asked him, what lotto?
But isn't it, when you think of the two of you, how cosmically weird the world is, that Johnny, you went through whatever you did, you decided to come home from New York, Niamh, you went through whatever you did, and here you are, you know, sitting side by side, alive, altruistic, generous, lotto winning in a physical sense, and you know, it just changed everything for you both.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at the chances. Like, she's the only one I kept in touch with after all the, you know, maybe 50,000 young people, you know, talking in the schools, and suddenly I'd be saying, does anyone ever listen to me anyway, you know? And suddenly I come out all them years later and you said, I was the one that benefited the most of it. You know, it's strange. It's strange. You'd wonder what kind of a random sort of...
It's a great news story, and I can't thank you enough for joining us today. Yeah.
And, you know, so I have a little website there, it's prayforhealing.ie, you know, so I do say little prayers for healing, and people do experience things, and sometimes people feel better or they might get healed of this, that and the other. And
Yeah, well, we need that more probably now than ever before.
I know, yeah, that's what I was thinking myself. I said she.
I'd just like to add that I had great support from my partner, Patrick.
Good.
And one of my colleagues from work, she came and stayed in my house for 2 weeks, actually, Aoife de Burka. And only for her and only for Patrick, you know, it wouldn't have been possible.
You had good people around you, which is the key to it all.
Absolutely.
And just to say thanks to my own family, you know, family and friends. I mean, like, where would you be without them? And yourself and the Irish Kidney Association.
Yes, we're going to mention all those details now. Johnny McCarthy, Niamh Flanagan, Godspeed to you both, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks,
thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you both. And just remind people that the Irish Kidney Association has taken the decision not to proceed with Organ Donor Awareness Week, which would have been March 28th to April 4th. But you can free text the word kidney to 50300, that's 5300. That'll donate €4. And like so many other charities in trouble, we're happy to mention that. And we appreciate both Johnny and Niamh coming in to talk to us this morning. The text number 51551.